You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
Welcome back, friends. Please make sure your pod seats and tray tables are in their upright and locked position. The airlock has been sealed and docking clamps have been released for an on-time departure to the Functional Nerdverse.
Patrick? I know something you don't know.
Oh, what do you know?
I know that our guest this week has actually listened to this show before.
It's true.
Zutalo. Yeah. Well, that's cool. We don't always get that. There's usually a sort of like, and who are you? Why do my people think this is worth my time? Kind of thing.
No. Usually, you guys are great.
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
I broke your flow.
You did. You just like, I blanked. I totally blanked because now I'm trying to miss segue here, right? I'm trying to figure out how to make the thing that I was like the A slot go into the B slot thing go over here.
Well, I know how to do that. The way you that is.
Okay. And now for something completely different. So as frequent listeners, perhaps including our guest, Mark Waddell, may be aware, I'm an employee of the state of Illinois by way of working for the particular school that I work for. Because of that, I have to do lots of trainings. Most of them are like videos and stuff online, slideshow, take a little quiz at the end to verify that I know the things. It's all very HR mandated. Beginning of September, we got an email with, I shit you not, 12 different trainings that we have to do. We've got bloodborne pathogens. We've got ethics. We've got, you know, IT security. We've got, you name it, we've got it. We're just going to be trained. And so I don't know if they do that with you, where you work in the real world, Patrick, but thinking about all that HR mandated IT training put me in a very particular mindset for Colin Gets Promoted and Dooms the World by Mark Waddell.
Yeah.
Because everybody has their version of an HR nightmare. But I think this is worse. I think Colin Harris's experience here is worse, Mark.
I think so. I mean, to be fair, the version of human resources that he works for is a little unusual.
A little light on the human. Yeah. Yeah, for one thing. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. Ever since the Doctor Who episode, I do not hear human resources the same way anymore.
Human resources.
Resources.
Oh. Yes. Mm. Well, and that is exactly what Colin is engaged in, right? And what his company is doing to these poor, hapless humans is gathering their resources, those handy, useful resources. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I always think of Wolfram and Hart as well now.
Yes, I did. I did too.
Hart energy. Yeah.
I did too. Yes. But as I was writing this book, I did think about them a lot. So, yeah.
All right. So that's plenty teaser, but let's see if we can catch the listeners up a little bit. So lay the groundwork for us here of Colin's dilemma.
So Colin Harris, the protagonist, is a 20-something nobody living and working in Manhattan. And he works for a company called Dark Enterprises, which is the world's oldest and most sinister company. And they've been around since roughly the dawn of human civilization. And they have made a very lucrative business for themselves, solving problems, usually in the worst way possible. And so management, which runs this company, are a sort of shadowy group of ancient, not quite humans. Mm-hmm. And they have, I think, 51 branch offices around the world. And Colin is but one of thousands of hapless employees working for the worst company you can imagine.
GE?
Yeah, it's GE.
Sorry, that was worse, that was a throwback to David Letterman. I actually meant Hasbro.
I guess they're all pretty bad.
Enterprises might have some interests represented in Hasbro. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Yeah. So, but of course, the title is Colin Gets Promoted and Dooms the World. Right. So
that's right. Yeah, so when we first meet Colin, he's stuck in a cubicle farm He's a data analyst for human resources, which is the department where they extract resources from humans. And he hates his job, right? He feels like he's been overlooked. He's been bullied by his coworkers. It's like anybody in their 20s. He wants more than life has offered him so far. And he believes he deserves it. He has suffered enough, and it's time for him to finally get the respect and power that he deserves. So the book opens with him discovering that he has a week to turn his job performance around, or he will be terminated, literally.
With a capital T.
Yes, exactly. And
that stands for pool.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets out on this sort of desperate quest to save himself, which, yeah, involves him being promoted, and everything is great for a little while. And then things go extremely badly for Colin and for the rest of the world.
It's sort of like they have that chart somewhere, which I suppose I should know better being an English teacher, where it's like, here are the major plots, like man versus nature, man versus this. But I sort of feel like one of the plots should be like, everything's going great, and then it doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So one of the, I mean, I can't help but ask to what extent you are drawing off of like the worst possible imaginations of workplace being hell versus like possibly some experiences that are in, I don't know.
So it's both. I have never worked in corporate environment. I've never worked in a cubicle farm, but I was in academia for a long time. And there is a truly soul-numbing amount of bullshit that you have to do when you're in academia. It's not just fancy research and fun teaching. It's a lot of committees and a lot of, as you were saying, a lot of training.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having suffered through years of that myself, there is a sort of latent pool of rage down there that was informing some of this as well.
See, I have never been in academia like the two of you. I have almost always been in corporate worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, having said that, I worked for my aunt and uncle for 13 years, like in school, out of school, HVAC wholesaler, not a corporate environment, very, mm-hmm. very loose. But then I went from that to a bank
mm-hmm.
that was doing warehousing stuff for folks like my aunt and uncle. And then I went to work for a company that was a subsidiary of General Electric.
Oh, heck. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
and this is your Colin Harris moment.
Yeah.
Here,
and then it's just like from that point, and I still remember like the president of the company that I was working for sat me down at one point and we were having a conversation. We got along. We got along. Like he had hired me for a job that he could not give me once I showed up because of internal politics. And the internal politics was that he wanted to get rid of someone because they weren't doing their job, in his opinion, and was just doing like a terrible thing. And so he wanted someone to come in who would get things done. And I had been recommended to him. And so he brings me in. And then he's like, she has threatened to sue us for sexual discrimination if we let her go and replace her with a guy. So I can't give you that job. I'm going to give you a different job. And it's like, okay. But anyway, so we sit down and we had a good rapport. And he finally goes, you need to not work in the corporate world.
Oh.
And I'm like, why? He's like, you tell the truth. You don't like bullshit. You don't deal well with bullshit. He's like, if I were you, I would just like start my own company and be my own boss. And I've always remembered that and I've never done it. You know, because corporate world,
podcasting will make you rich. Yeah. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Corporate world has its perks in, you know, benefits and they give you money and those kinds of things. But yeah, corporate world, there's a lot of stuff. Like I know that you guys are talking about training videos and stuff. What I love is when the corporate world realizes they can just use training videos from LinkedIn.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, I will say, you know, I left academia in 2021, and part of why I left was that it, especially in the U.S., it is increasingly the same as the corporate world. It is increasingly corporatized to a degree where it's really no longer about the things it should be about. But that's a rant for a different podcast. I will just say that the sort of corporatization of the world, it's just creeping into every sector and every institution. So, yeah.
I mean, the corporate model and like the capitalist model are intrinsically tied to one another. And I think that the idea of tying that to like an enterprise of evil might seem like picking at the low hanging fruit there. But I think if we give the idea credit and dig into it a little bit here, like the thing we all disagree on specific actions and whether or not they're evil at a certain point, like murder. Okay, bad. Let's not do that. You know, rape. That's a bad one too. Let's not do that one either. And then other sorts of things would be like theft. Well, I don't know. Like theft is bad, but what if the person really needs it? What if they're starving? What if it's a Jean Valjean and the loaf of bread? Like we can get kind of lost in the details of what counts as good or evil and whatnot. Once we reach a certain place in trying to answer that question. But I think fundamentally, the concept of evil comes down to the idea of striving towards some kind of goal, no matter its destructive consequences.
Exactly.
Like I think fundamentally, all forms of evil have that in common, that there is a set of destructive consequences that matter less to the person perpetrating it than the fact that I want this, right? And that is the thing that like unites like the endless expansion of capitalism idea and corporatization and the idea of like we need to make the money for the shareholders. That idea of like we need to do this thing because we've set our sights on this end result, and by gum, we're going to get there no matter what. And so I think smart critiques of that world that also play with the comedy and the absurdism of evil, they offer us a lot. It's one of the reasons why we still admire Terry Pratchett the way that we do in genre.
You know, one of the things that one of the questions that I wanted to try and answer, which of course I haven't and probably will never be able to writing this, is the way in which corporatization and capitalism sort of demand complicity from a lot of people who work for a lot of these companies. And, you know, Colin is an example. So my poor, wonderful husband read this book, has read a couple drafts, and then, of course, the final version. He genuinely does not like Colin. He thinks Colin is a terrible person. And he is a terrible person to a degree, in that Colin works for a company, like in the first chapter, we see him just watching people being tortured. And he's like, well, it's just another day, right?
Day that ends in Y.
And one of the questions that I asked a lot as I was writing this was, I mean, you know, people who work for companies like ExxonMobil or Meta or whatever, fundamentally, these are people who are just there to get a paycheck, right? They just want to live, and they just want to have a roof over their head and feed their families. Can we hold them, you know, complicit or responsible for the terrible things that these companies do every single day? And there are different answers to that. And I think there is no right answer, but that was something that I wanted to really delve into with the character of Colin and with the people that he works with, right? And kind of show them as these are just ordinary people with everyday struggles who happen to be immersed in this ancient company that employs literal blood sacrifices, right? Does that make what they're doing okay? Can we excuse them for it? I don't know. That's kind of up to the reader to decide. And it's interesting. I know we're not supposed to read reviews, but it is interesting to see the way in which Colin himself is a pretty polarizing character. He is morally gray, which tends to bring that out anyhow. But there are some readers that really love him and really, at least, seem to kind of sympathize with him. Mm-hmm. And there are others who say, no, this is just a straight up villain, and I'm not interested in liking villains, which, given the state of the world, I totally understand, right? So, yeah.
Do you think Colin is on a redemption journey in Colin Gets Promoted, or just a save my ass journey?
No, he is on a self-serving journey for power. That's it. And I very deliberately made that choice early on. He was not at the, spoiler alert, he was not at the end of this book going to come to Jesus and have a moment of like, oh, this company does terrible things and I should just walk away, right? No, I that would be disingenuous and I think kind of a cop out to bigger kind of questions I wanted to play with here.
So at the end of the book, he just kind of looks out and says, "Execute Order 66."
Maybe not verbatim.
Like that, but he can aspire to that sort of power for sure. Yeah.
But I do like the fact that, and I say this as someone who very much digs a redemption arc story, but I do think we tend to fetishize the idea of the redemption journey and the redemptive path. And I think we do it because everybody feels themselves at some level to be at fault for something or some things, plural. And we want to see characters be redeemed because we're so afraid we are at risk of not being redeemed. Whether we're, and I'm not talking in a religious sense. I just mean in a sense of being a person who's worth the carbon used to put them together that might otherwise be used to make graphite pencils. Like, that's really like, am I good? Not good with the capital G of ethics, but good in the sense of like, am I like, is the universe at least neutral for my presence, let alone like worse off? And I think not focusing on how can we create this sort of absurdist comic, but also dark and sort of horror tinged experience for Colin, that's not trying to convince us that there's like this rainbow or something at the end where he's transformed, actually is refreshing in its own way. Because it's, I think, asking us to confront our own obsession with redemption. Like, does everybody have to be redeemed? Should everybody be redeemable? To your Order 66 comment from before, I've got big beef with the Darth Vader redemption, but that's a whole other thing. Mark, I'm sorry.
No. First of all, fully agree about Vader. Like, come on.
He's not redeemed.
But no.
He's got mad at his boss and chucked him in a pit.
Well, yeah, I mean, this guy murdered children. Like, come
on. I was going to say. I mean, the younglings. Come on.
Yeah. It's kind of a thing.
Killing one view doesn't quite balance the scales there. But no, and that is sort of exactly, you know, Tracy, I think that is exactly how I feel as well. Is yes, I can appreciate a good redemption arc if it's nuanced and if it's complicated and if it's, you know, if it's not like, oh, you know, we watch this person go from just pure evil to just, you know, snowy white goodness, like, I think people can be heroic without being quote unquote good, right? I think people can do heroic things for reasons that other people might find questionable. Mm-hmm. And we are, I think, as a culture, not, you know, I think globally, obsessed with a very kind of black and white narrative structure of we need to be able to point the finger and say, well, this person is bad and this person is good. And that sort of narrow and simplistic thinking is, I mean, look at where that's brought us, right? Globally. It's like we're just in a tough spot. And I think to me the most compelling characters are genuinely flawed and the way that all of us are, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want those flaws to magically disappear. I want them to still be there at the end, and I want them to still matter at the end. right? And I think that is, to me, that is relatable. And I think the key to writing compelling characters is that they are relatable, and sort of what you were saying, that we see ourselves reflected in them. And maybe that does mean we want to see them rise above their worst impulses. But maybe that also means that we see them as flawed, struggling people who at the end are still flawed and still struggling. That to me feels very real. Mm-hmm. And Colin is still that. I think if the main arc that Colin goes through is self-worth, he goes from someone who really doesn't believe in himself to someone who, sure, he dooms the world, and that's not great. But along the way, he learns, maybe I do have qualities, and I do have more power than I thought I did. Mm-hmm. Which I find uplifting in a particular way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think being willing to sit with that grayness and that complexity, I think kind of brings us back to what books are for and what they're really good at. You know, that we are
killing spiders.
Also that. Yeah. Yeah. That's killing spiders.
Those spiders ever do. Come on.
I mean, like,
broke the basement treaty. There is a basement treaty in this house. They're allowed to be in the basement, but as soon as they come upstairs, they're in violation of the treaty stipulations, okay. And then I get to smush them.
Okay. I mean, I don't have a basement treaty in my house, but if I did, I suppose I would stand by it similarly. We generally just have a "you're fine until you're hairy" rule in Shea Townsend. Like, once the spiders get really big and hairy, we're like, no, have to go live outside now. Like, you can't. Like, it's fine if you're weird looking and have lots of legs and stuff, but we're fur racists when it comes to the
arachnids. Yeah, that's
fair. The arachnid that's types. Fair. Yeah, like, you probably belong someplace that's much hotter than Chicago and need to go away. take your venom elsewhere if you have it. not related to insects, but I guess maybe kind of sort of. The thing about, people talk all the time about the folks reading less than they used to, and I don't know statistically what numbers we have, if any, to kind of give substance to that, the general vibes feeling that folks are always talking about. But I do think that one thing that seems to trend with, as people are spending more time doing their reading mediated through a screen and largely through like small news articles and social media and things like that, is that type of writing doesn't have the literal physical space for nuance. It just doesn't. Like, the closest thing you might get is maybe a social media thread that's got, like, because it's a thread, it'll have multiple posts where it's trying to create nuance. But what happens? People screenshot the part of it that serves their particular vision of things, and that's what becomes circulated and so on. And so I think books that are fun and funny, but also kind of like uncomfortable and dark, invite us to get back to nuance, which, we really could stand to have some nuance in this world right now, because you're in Canada, thank God. Because and we're not.
You mean,
and so that's
the, you mean
that's
the 50-year-old?
No.
Okay, well, goodbye.
Great. Yeah, but, that's right.
No, I'm not going to stand for American colonial bullshit, so.
No.
See you later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not going to blame me on that. No. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Patrick, do the people in your life, like, do they also have no capacity for nuance?
Here's what's interesting. So, last weekend, as we're recording this, the D&D 5e campaign ended. So we did our final battle for Giles's campaign. But one of the things that he was talking about is that he really likes that he has so many friends who have such disparate opinions on things.
Okay. Yeah.
That are very different from his own, especially me, because, you know, it gives him the opportunity to be pushed. Mm-hmm. And kind of hear different opinions. one of the problems that we're having, I think, in our society, especially in America these days, is that people, and I've said this for years, we live in our own little bubbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you look at the science fiction and fantasy community of writers and like the book community, the folks who go to Worldcon, the folks who go to Capricorn and Mile High Con and all the cons that I love, they and we all live in this little bubble. Mm-hmm. And then when something pops through from the other side of the bubble, people go, what the fuck is happening? Oh my God. Like they, and so yeah. There's bubbles everywhere. And so I've got family in the South and they live in their own little bubble. And when someone pushes in on their bubble and says, you know, this is fascist, this is blah, 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 they freak out because that's not the world they live in. In the world that they're living in, everything's great.
We've kind of curated nuance out of our lives, right?
And this is what social media has created. Mm-hmm. This is what corporations have created in that they serve you up through the algorithms. They serve you up the things that they think that you want to see. And if you see those things and you interact with those things, they serve you more of it. You never get the things that are contrary to that anymore. All you see is the stuff that supports whatever it is you're thinking at that moment. Mm-hmm. And so it's destroying critical thinking. It's destroying nuance. It's destroying relationships. It's just all of that's crumbling down. And so would you like, Tracy, for me to get down from my soapbox now?
I mean, I spend lots of time on soapboxes as well. I mean, fair is fair.
But I mean, that's what it is. It's hilarious to me that every once in a while, like I do enjoy YouTube. And I'll go on YouTube and I'll watch something completely different. And then YouTube doesn't know what the fuck to do with me anymore.
Oh, see, I have, I don't do a lot of YouTube, but I am on the Facebooks. And it is sort of fascinating to me how stupid the algorithm is. Mm-hmm. And I think it is stupid because corporate, right?
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is like this morning, I was scrolling through my feed and there was like one of those reels things playing and it had a scene from King of the Hill, which is not a show I have ever watched.
Oh, Bobby.
No surprise. Bad at TV. Bobby. And so it happened to be a scene accessory where there was like a joke about steak going on and like the preparation of steak. And so I watched the reel and it was vaguely amusing. I scroll down. The next thing I've got is a ad promotion push for mail order frozen steaks because it's decided you are a steak person. Because I looked at one frigging thing and then I keep going. And then there is a different mail order push sort of thing where it's like handbags. And I'm like, that looks like an interesting bag. And my bag that I use for going forth and back from school is shot. So I click at it and have a look and I decide too rich for my blood, too fancy for me. The cats would tear it apart anyway. And so I click away from it. Now it's like, you're a handbag person. And everything, I get posts with people talking about handbags and everything down to the topmost dermis.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be
contact with.
You don't have to click on it.
Mm.
It's an interaction. Oh. You've paused on it.
Yeah,
because I get, and this should be surprising to no one listening to this. I get a lot of ads for custom TTRPG dice.
No, what? Why?
Because I will pause. I will pause. I'm like, oh, those are fucking cool. Whoa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, so now they're sending me, I got the Lord of the Rings dice showed mm-hmm. up where they actually have the one ring inside the die. And I'm just like, oh, you bastards. Wow. And then they sent me the Doctor Who one. So it's like the 20 is the TARDIS. Those are so nice.
That's great.
And then, like, they just keep showing me all these custom diets. And I'm like, just algorithm me. Go ahead.
Who do the corporate overlords think you are, Mark? Like, if you were to pick up your phone now and see what they're serving up to you.
Yeah. So it is funny because I really try to stay off social media as much as I can. Yeah. But I do sometimes fall into, like, Instagram.
Instagram is mine.
And because it's so easy to just
it is
scrolling and
yep.
And so, but I do find it's weird because it really seems to change depending on the day, right? So I get, I'll you know, click on something that's like queer content, and that's great. And then I'll see kind of that, I should say, you know, like usually queer comedians.
Yeah.
But then it'll serve me, you know, some whatever, like little amateur video. And it's very like anti-woman and pro-male. And I don't realize, because I'm like watching it for 5 seconds, like, what's this about? And then I realize, oh. It's and like, then it begins serving
gender?
Me.
Gender? I don't know.
Yeah. Like, well, and then it began serving me a ton of these of these accounts that are like, you know, pro male, women suck. I'm like, okay. So I spend half my time going, I'm not interested. I don't want to see anything from this. And I try and manipulate the algorithm that way, which is so stupid. Why am I wasting my life trying to tell this mindless
you didn't
algorithm?
Want this to begin with. Now you have to tell them you don't want it.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I don't know. As a I was a digital marketer. I gave it up for Lent. I don't know the efficacy of actually clicking that and saying I'm not interested in this ad. Yeah. I don't know if that works or if that's like the unsubscribe in an email. The unsubscribe in an email only works if the server's in America. If the server's outside of America, they are not subject to the Can't Spam Act. Or any other rules that are inside of America right now about that. If you click unsubscribe, you have to be unsubscribed. Outside of America, in other countries like Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, places like that where a lot of these server forms live, clicking unsubscribe just tells them there's a real person there and they add you to every single list that they have. And they send you more stuff.
I just unsubscribed from like 2 things yesterday.
I know, me too. That's
it's really difficult. So to be honest with you, if you have Gmail, unsubscribe.
That's what I do.
Gmail will unsubscribe you. They will do it for real. But if you actually click the link in the email that says unsubscribe, it's hit or miss whether or not that's actually going to unsubscribe you. Or if some dude in Czechoslovakia is going to add you to 20 different lists.
And this gets back to the corporate thing, right? Because corporations thrive on the technicality of law, right?
Yes.
That there's laws about economics and about you know, operations and various things that they kind of have to squint at to figure out how are we going to slither through so that we can obey as precisely as possible what is asked for here while doing as little as possible of what is actually asked
for. And that's what corporations that I've worked for in America have done as far as Can't Spam Act. But then came COPPA and CASEL.
I don't know if
Mark's familiar with it, but CASEL is Canadians. Canadian. That's their
job for the Canadians.
That's their law on underage. Like what you can market to kids and corporations and whether or not it was solicited or if it's an unsolicited email. And so like CASEL changed a lot of stuff and forced a lot of American companies to change how they're doing their digital marketing. And then California picked up on that and said, hey, we want that too. And that's where COPPA comes in.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah.
And so it's all about, you know, you cannot market to kids. You can send one email, I think, in Canada to someone that's unsolicited if they have done something with you. If they have been to your website, if they filled out a form, if they've done something, you can send them an email. They can still complain. Yeah. They can still put you on a list and say, I did not want this email. Don't send this to me.
Right.
But like there is stuff like that that's going on.
No wonder the kind of narrative metaphor of corporate as evil magical broker works so well, because we effectively have like with the how do we weave around the laws, we effectively have like how do you navigate a fey pact without being sort of trapped into it kind of angle mixed with the how do we set up the wards and abjurations against what is trying to be done to us from
if you look at it, it's even worse than you think, because you know social media companies, internet companies have protections that newspapers don't in America. Newspapers with free speech don't have the same protections that a Meta does, right?
So newspapers with what we have what now?
Newspapers don't have the same anything like protections.
Oh. Protections and free speech.
There's only so many.
Remember what those were.
Yeah, There's only so many of those. Yeah.
It's fuzzy now. It seems different somehow.
Well, just tonight, or actually Monday night. So not tonight. Monday night, watch Jimmy Kimmel. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
How's that First Amendment going?
Yeah.
Seems like not great. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
All I can say is that the administration, when they came in, said that they were going to restore freedom of speech. So.
They did, just only for the people that they want to have it. It is
working for some people, which is great.
Yes.
Welcome back to my soapbox. This is why I canceled Disney Plus and Hulu.
Alas.
Yeah, I know.
Well, hopefully we can turn this thing around and have something positive to talk about here. So picks of the week.
Picks of the week. Producer's log. Stardate 2025.09. We are heading into an area of empty space. Sensors indicate this has been caused by complicated personal schedules throughout the month of October, including but not limited to birthdays, speaking engagements, and an upcoming literary science fiction convention. Due to these conflicts, the episode going live in the feed on Tuesday, September 29th, will most likely be the last until October 27th. Patrons will, of course, still receive their exclusive patrons-only episode over on patreon.com/functionalnerds. Along with other exclusive content and perks, you should totally check it out. Why haven't you? I say most likely because the engineer, the audio engineer, is considering putting together some sort of highlight episodes of Patreon-exclusive podcasts to have something in the feed in October. But that bastard, he's insane. So who knows if he'll pull it off or simply sleep all the way through October. Looking ahead, the empty space clears and becomes crowded again into the usual breaks around the holidays. So we should be good for the last couple of months of 2025. In other news, I found out something really interesting about Dr. McCoy. Turns out he...
Right. So, Patrick, now that we've gone into the deeper darkness of, like, reality, let's make it better.
Let's go into darkness. So, my pick this week is a show that I started watching and I wasn't sure about, and I don't think I picked it in the past. It's on Apple TV. And Apple TV, I feel like, is they're kind of doing what Fox did when they first launched, is that like they're doing like a lot of different stuff to see what's gonna resonate. Mm-hmm. And they're taking a lot of chances. And one of the things that they're taking chances with is science fiction. So they're doing lots of different kinds of science fiction stuff. Mm-hmm. And one show that I wasn't sure about, but I've gotten into it, is called Invasion.
Okay.
And this is a very global centric show, in that, you know, you have characters who are in Japan, you have characters who are in America, you have characters who are in Afghanistan. You have all these different, like there's England, and so it's a bit of an anthology, or not necessarily an anthology. What am I thinking of? What's the word for when you have an ensemble cast? Oh, ensemble.
That one. Yeah.
And
you did it. Good job.
And so you have there's a group of kids in season one. There's a group of kids on a field trip in the UK. And so you're focusing on them a little bit as this invasion is happening. You have a Muslim family in New York, who are you're focused on them and what's going on with them. There's a Navy SEAL in Afghanistan with his men, and then you have a Japanese astronaut, and then her girlfriend, who is running the program or something, but isn't really in charge because, you know, they have to have a man in charge kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then this invasion happens and people don't really know that the invasion is happening. And then they start to figure it out as the aliens start to show up and bad things start happening. And I think it's on season three right now, if I'm not mistaken. I think there's three seasons. So season three is happening right now. It's slow as shit because they're doing an episode a week, which drives me up a wall. But it's very good.
Used to be.
It's very quiet. and very, it's setting a mood and a tone as it's going, and it's building, and it just builds over time. And very, very creepy. It's that whole Hollywood thing where like the aliens are there, but you're not seeing the aliens. And then when you finally see it, you're like, oh shit, there's some aliens and they don't look like us at all. And, you know, stuff like that's going on. And there's weird things happening with the kids and there's other weird things happening. And yeah, and it's good stuff. It's really well written. It's really well acted. It does get a little exhausting on me to read during the Japanese scenes because they're all speaking Japanese and you have to read the subtitles and then it's like, but that's just a me thing. But it's good. It's really, really good. Apple TV.
It does sound good.
Yeah. They also have For All Mankind, which is also really, really good. Slow Horses is really good.
Foundation?
I had a hard time with Foundation and I've never read the books. So it wasn't that.
Yeah, me neither.
But I've heard good things from other people. Like they've enjoyed it. So
me too. Man. Yeah.
I mean, it looks gorgeous. All these shows it look does. Gorgeous. They all look gorgeous. They've spent some money on them. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
For sure. Your iPhone going to work on the televisions.
Yes.
All right, Mark. How about you? What's your pick?
Oh yeah, it's another TV show. The most my husband and I really we just needed the most positive, wholesome entertainment we could find. So we have been working our way through the latest season of The Great British Baking Show.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's everybody knows it and loves it. It's just the nicest, kindest, most generous people just baking for 50 minutes. And it's just like, oh, I mean, I personally find it quite stressful sometimes because of the way it's shot and then the music gets super tense and then someone drops something. But but no, it's that for us has just been, okay, this is our hour every night where we can just watch something nice. So that's what we've been doing.
My daughter and I watched that together. And I think the major thing that has struck her because there was a couple of other reality shows that we had watched together that were, you know, different kinds of competitions. But she turns to me every now and again, she's like, they're just so much nicer than the American reality show people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. Cause the American reality show people are like, someone will die.
Yeah.
Here it's sort of like, oh, your bun's a bit claggy and you know, it's about as far as it goes.
Well, and they are so nice to each other as they are competing, right? Which you don't really see elsewhere, right? It's sort of like, I will claw my way over you to get this prize. And
at the very least, the producers are trying to cut it to give it that vibe if it wasn't there. True. And it's clear that there is a consensus understanding that that's not the tone we're going to strike here.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I will throw it out. Yeah. Mark and I talked before Tracy jumped on and you said you don't have Apple TV. The thing that a lot of people get Apple TV for is Ted Lasso.
Oh, right. Which I have never seen.
And that is if you're looking for something that's just going to make you feel good, like that's a good show to make you feel good.
Okay. Good to know.
The other one that I discovered was Ewan McGregor, who plays Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Star Wars films. Hello there. Mm-hmm. He and his best friend, who they've been best friends forever, do these motorcycle trips and they film them.
Oh, that's right.
There's like Long Way Down, Long Way Over. The latest one I think was called Long Way Around, where they went up into like the Arctic and then came back down into Scotland.
Great.
Those are great for just watching a couple of guys who've known each other for 40 years or whatever it is. Just hanging out, riding motorcycles, camping, stopping, you know, having some food with the locals, playing music with the locals. Like Ewan brings out like an instrument and he'll play with them and sing. And it's just good fun. It's just great stuff.
It does sound nice.
Yeah. There you go. Cup of tea in that. Yeah. So shall it be.
So Tracy, what game are you picking this week?
I am not picking a book. I am picking a book. And so this book comes to us by way of my very delightful colleague at work, Ashley, who it's so background on this. We're getting into letters of rec season because all these high school seniors are getting very sweaty about where they're going to spend the rest of their academic lives. Mm-hmm. And so I'm neck deep in requests and starting to actually write the letters and so on. And I was talking with folks on my team about this, and Ashley sent me the name of this particular book, which the concept of it, I was like sold immediately. And so I put it on reserve in my library. And then as soon as it came in, went and picked it up. The book is called Dear Committee Members, a novel by Julie Schumacher. Now for background, This is a realistic fiction book. It is set in our world. It has no fantasy elements. It has no genre elements, whatever. The thing that bit me about it is that the central character of this book is a middle-aged, recently divorced university professor who has had a career as a fiction author with an agent and everything, but it's kind of dried up, and he's kind of struggling as a writer. He's kind of lost his way emotionally. He's feeling dragged down, and it is his story as told through letters of recommendation he's writing for people.
Oh, wow. Oh, interesting.
And which is why she brought it up. And so I hope that everyone can indulge me here for a minute, because this one's fucking hilarious. I'm going to read like the first couple paragraphs of one, like literally randomly turn to it. Also, because you absolutely can read it sequentially and it will kind of tell a story, but you can also just jump around and find stuff. So this letter is addressed to the Neologisms Conference Committee. Dear Harold, Ms. Rowena Handel has recently submitted a proposal to your Neologisms Conference, a proposal she now belatedly understands that was to be accompanied by a letter of reference. Ms. Handel is neither my advisee nor my student. She pinned me down outside the men's room, conveniently adjacent to my office, so that my writing and research are invariably conducted to the flushing of waste. And, with the anxious desperation for which PhD candidates are justifiably known, trailed behind me into my office, installed herself in the red vinyl chair that has cradled the backsides of thousands, and insisted I listen to a frantic rendition of her proposal for the purposes of writing, on her behalf, this exalted document. It is 2 p.m. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving, and here in my office the snow is accreting in small picturesque dumps against the ill-fitting window, which rattles in its Dickensian casement. The other faculty, including Ms. Handel's actual advisors, have retreated like whack-a-moles into obscure campus locales or left town on vacation, divorced, somewhat recently spurned, and therefore doomed to spend the holiday with two vegetarians from the classics department. I was apparently the only living member of the faculty the unfortunate Ms. Handel was able to find. And it goes on from there.
I love that.
Oh. The whole book is just a treasure, especially for, I don't know, maybe folks like you and me, Mark.
I think I have a little flash of PTSD. Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a Schadenfreude meets PTSD meets sigh of relief, even if you're not someone from academia, in Dear Committee Members by Julie Schumacher.
Nice. I am definitely picking that up. That sounds fantastic.
And the reference to being in the office next to the toilet reminded me, there was some lawyer show, I think it was on CBS, and there was a lawyer who was like in the cubicle farm, but then she got like a big client or something, and they're like, oh, we're going to give you an office. And they give her an office. They built an office next to the bathroom. And so every time someone came out of the bathroom, the door would go bang on her wall and make her jump. And of course. And just for some reason that reminded me of that.
Yeah. So many things in the workplace for us to enjoy. Yeah. At least none of them are likely to get the world destroyed. So, Colin, where can people find you and your super cool books?
Yes. So, Colin Gets Promoted and Dooms the World comes out on October 7th from Penguin Random House. Ace Books, they're in print there, as well as Viking Canada. You can find me, my website is markwaddellbooks.com. And you can also find me, the only social media I really do is on Instagram. And I'm there as Mark Waddell Author.
Nice.
Well, it has been awesome talking to you. And
yes, likewise.
Yeah. Just steer clear of HR.
Yeah, please. All of us.
Every last one of us.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of The Functional Nerds. We really appreciate it. If you liked this episode, or really any of our episodes, please consider backing us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can get access to some cool stuff and help us to keep the lights on. You can also show your support by mentioning us and sharing any of our episodes on your own social channels to help boost the signal. Trust me, that can be huge.
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake, Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry, do you know who I, like, I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.